Welcome to the Your Home Podcast, brought to you by O'Brien Real Estate, where property advice is on the house.
And welcome along to the Your Home Podcast. I'm producer Jane Neild. I'm joined by Stavros Ambazidis. Every few weeks, Stav, we've had some incredible guests on, but today I am looking forward to talking to our guest today. To quote the Property Tribune, he has an impressively long resume and a passport to match. He's worked for some of the world's largest technology companies, has been stationed across Europe, Africa, and most recently the United States. John Fung is the Chief Revenue Officer at Domain. He returned home to Australia after his most recent role at Uber in California, which you only have to say Uber to realise the calibre of our guest, John, today. He is part of Australia's leading real estate listing platform, of course, Domain. And he's in the studio with us today. Stav, just before we introduce John, quick snapshot of how you know John.
So John and O'Brien Real Estate have a real long relationship, being Domain Real Estate and O'Brien Real Estate. And John was good enough to organise Alice Stultz to come to the podcast, mm-hmm. which was one of our first ever invitees. So there you go.
Yeah, she was a great guest. So go back in the feed and listen to that. John, welcome to your home, to the podcast studio, from Uber and Google to Domain in Australia. Just let us know, how's the transition been back to Australian soil? You grew up in Sydney. It must have been a pretty big change from Silicon Valley.
It was a big change, even though we managed up settling just around the corner from where I grew up and my parents are still around. This time I had a few, let's say, guests to accompany me. I had a wife and two young girls, and we've added the third since then. So that part has definitely been a momentous shift for all of us.
Oh, incredible. And just tell us a little bit about working for a company like Uber. I mean, we have seen technology change our lives in ways we never would have thought possible.
Yeah.
10, 20 years ago, it's been an incredible ride. And working for tech companies like Google and Uber, do you pinch yourself sometimes and just think, wow, how did this become my career? And now I'm in real estate.
Yeah, I think the great thing about companies like Uber and Google is there's almost an expectation that whatever you're doing, you're going to try and change the world.
Yeah.
You know, there's something at Google called the toothbrush test, which is we only want to look on stuff that is used by billions of people at least twice a day.
The toothbrush test. I love that.
Yeah. So that's, you think about scale in a different way. And it was, I feel very grateful to have grown up. I was there for 15 years in those companies. To have grown up there was a real treat.
I've been to San Francisco back in 16. A friend of ours here at the podcast, Andrew Bogut, invited us over to go and watch a few games. He was at the Golden State Warriors at the time.
Yeah.
And we actually did go to Google, and I was fascinated, just fascinated what that city of Google was, you know, from the bikes, the pods, groups of people hanging out together.
Yep.
It was like being at Chadston. At the Apple store, just 10x. Like it was just tenfold. And the uniforms, what I noticed, you know, I was obviously coming from O'Brien Real, so we had our suit and ties and all that sort of stuff. It was just freestyle. Freestyle thinking. It was just like the movie.
The internship.
Yeah. Exactly like the internship. And I remember getting on one of those bikes and going for a ride, John, but I went too far. And it actually just stopped. And this is prior to us having, the
e-bikes.
The e-bikes here and the scooters. And I nearly fell off. But what was it like? Because coming from Australia, it was very different. I know the world's changing in Australia.
Yeah.
We've got these companies now that are probably creators. Companies are probably identified as creators. They can be disruptors. And we're just getting used to it now. But back in your day, in the US with Uber, and there's a lot of them there. Airbnb's based in San Fran.
Yeah.
LinkedIn.
That's right.
Apple,
Facebook.
Yep.
Yeah.
They're all there. And the closed ecosystems, can you tell us about what it was like, just the snapshot of it all?
Yeah. I mean, I joined Google back in 2006 when I was a business school and MBA intern. Mm-hmm. So I was pretty, I'd only had 2 or 3 years work experience. And it really is like a university campus feel. If you think about what the best university is supposed to be like, you go there to learn, you go there and your mindset is anything is possible. Mm-hmm. I'm going to change the world. I'm surrounded by people going to change the world. And there's like a boldness, a brashness, a naivety. You know, in that, that's actually kind of beautiful. It actually almost reminds me, you know, instead of a bunch of young girls running around and that boldness you see and that, like, I can do anything. I could be an astronaut, a prime minister, a sports star. Like, you see that. And that's actually what was very much encouraged in those places. And the reason why is, you know, in a natural marketplace of ideas, of course, most things don't plan out. But it's the ideas that pan through, those multi-billion or trillion-dollar ideas, that's what pays for the company.
And is it a case as well that you have sort of respected a level of, you know, back in the day, the intern, like, shh, don't talk unless you're spoken to. But from the way you're talking, I'm guessing that perhaps the idea would be that the intern could have an idea that could make $1 billion and perhaps listen to people who aren't necessarily high up in the company structure.
Totally. I got my start at an American company called McKinsey & Company. It's a consulting company, and they have four values. And the value that you're speaking to is called obligation to dissent, which is we need to honor everyone's voice at the company.
Interesting.
And if you have a good idea, not only do you have the option to raise it, you have an obligation to raise it because best ideas are not limited to senior management. They typically come from people closest to the tools. And so very much that's Google, that's Uber, that's those companies on steroids.
Have you tried to bring some of that ethos into Domain?
Yeah, we have. And I think, you know, Domain's it's been a wonderful company to join. I think the reason I was really attracted to Domain is it is kind of literally a bricks and mortar company, that one that has a very good, you know, brand name, particularly the Eastern Seaboard, but one that aspires to be technology-like, to think about scale. And so it has a lot of natural features that honor employee voice. You know, so some of the things I brought in is we had something at Google called TGIF, thank God it's Friday. And what would happen every week, that became every second week, is you'd get all the leaders up on stage and anyone could ask anyone a question, right? And the whole idea is you kind of democratize your company, right? No one is above accountability. In fact, encourage tough questions. You know, you kind of have it out and explain why it is. And that's something I brought into I have a monthly team meeting. I have a monthly meeting with all my leadership, my extended people manager group, as well as my direct reports. We always have, we use a technology called Slido. There's a few of them out there, but it allows people to ask questions even anonymously. And those questions can be nice. They can be soft for, they can be really, really tough. And I love that whole idea that everybody is expected to challenge and to think and to be an owner of the company.
Wow. I think I've learned a few new definitions here today. and I tell you what, university campus feel, that is the best description that I could actually have received today of what it felt like at Google.
Yeah.
Mm. I love that you challenge. So you'd say, you would say you'd challenge each other with your thoughts at Google.
Yeah.
So that's impressive. Now, one of your other team members, Sam Johnson, actually... while I was over in San Francisco, suggested I go and see the real estate portal of the US.
Yes.
And I met one of the guys there called Tom.
Okay.
And I spoke to Tom and he was telling me about how, you know, where he lives and what it's like in the US and, you know, coming from Melbourne. You coming from Sydney, what was it like? What was the home like? 'Cause our podcast is called Your Home.
Yeah.
What was it like? 'Cause he said he had a gated community and some of the people that were in that gated community were high up execs at Facebook, and he gave me a few of the names at the time, and it was really high up. And the people that his kids would play with and associate with. What was your home like in the US?
So I had a few different homes in the US. I lived in the US in a few different stints, about 10 years. I'll describe two main home times. When I was single, I was working for Google. I was living in the city, and I would take the Google bus from the city to the Google campus every day. These are the Wi-Fi enabled buses that actually I now see in Sydney with the school kids now, which is amazing. My life there was I lived in a high-rise apartment in San Francisco. I really enjoyed it. It was in the city. It was near the baseball stadium. We were surrounded by sports the whole time. And that was very much a lifestyle of, you know, you go to work during the week, you work hard, and then at nights and at weekends, you're out seeing people, you know, a lot of ex-classmates, new friends, other Aussies out there, and then you just enjoy sports and barbecues. It was, you know, not that different to maybe inner city Melbourne life. And then as I grew up and we moved to the suburbs and got married and had kids, that was kind of similar to a classic suburban life here. I think we're lucky that in that part of San Francisco, it's not so There are parts of America where there is a lot more crime. It's a challenging place to be. It's a bit less safe. We're very fortunate in this place. It was very multicultural, very safe, really good schools. And so we enjoyed, very similar life we had in Sydney. Sport, sun, enjoyment, and many other families.
Our guest today on the Your Home podcast, of course, thanks to O'Brien Real Estate, where property advice is on the house, is John Fung, the Chief Revenue Officer at Domain. John, I want to take you back even further than those days, the single days, to your family life. You had parents who had migrated to Australia from Malaysia and Hong Kong. Your dad, am I right, was a real estate agent.
He was.
Is he really thrilled that you have somehow, although you say that real estate was a little bit of a surprise career move for you, is he thrilled that you are back in Australia and also now in the property industry?
Yeah, I mean, my dad, I think he probably didn't aspire for me to become a real estate agent. He was someone who, he was classically trained. He was in business. He worked in a bank. Where he got into real estate was very much as an investor. And then he decided that actually being an investor and an agent was a really good mix because he could use that knowledge both, you know, with customers and for himself and I guess his family. And very much, I guess I come from that school as well. Like he got me investing from when I was really young in real estate when I was 18. And so I think he's thrilled that me and the family are back. I think he's thrilled that I am in real estate, which is our family business. But I've been able to kind of take that technology, that business angle to it. So I think if I was in real estate, he'd want me to be in a job like I'm now or a job like what Stavros is doing now, you know, where you're running an office and building a culture. So I think he's pretty happy.
And so tell us about that sort of investment ethos. There'll be people listening who are obsessed with real estate. Like, I'm on my second property, but it only came to it late. Is it a matter of what you say, which is it's never too late? And also, do you have advice for perhaps even a parent listening? Like, I just am so annoyed at my parents that they never actually helped me to get a rental house. I went to uni, I've moved house 25 times and paid people's mortgages off for decades of my lives. So if they'd just done what a lot of other parents had done and gone, okay, you're going to move out of home, but let's buy a place. You can pay it off. We'll help you.
Yeah.
Is there something in that that perhaps if you're thinking, how do I give my kids the best foot up in life, that maybe investing is the way to go?
Look, as a somewhat new parent, I guess, myself, and I'm still pretty new to all this thing, parenting is hard. There's like 100 things you want to impart to your kids, and by the time you figure out the curriculum, they don't want to listen to you, right? Yeah. So it sounds like your parents did a wonderful job in many ways, and I'm sure investing was one of the things on their list they were trying to get to. I think for me, there's probably two ethoses that have made my family and my wife's family actually specialize in property. I think one ethos is don't try and time the market, maximize time in the market.
Interesting.
Right? This whole idea is the more years you can spend, the merrier, right? The second ethos is the great thing about particularly residential property as opposed to shares, as opposed to maybe other kinds of property, is you can use leverage. And so safe leverage is a powerful tool. And for those of your listeners who, you know, for the concept of leverage, when you buy a share from the share market, you typically pay for the entire share. You're buying $1,000, it costs you $1,000. But if you're buying a property for, let's say, $1 million, you rarely pay $1 million. You'll pay it in the sense that that's how much money is transferred, but you might only pay $200,000 or $300,000 of your own money and you'll borrow the rest. And what effectively that does, as all of you know, is it means that if that property doubles from $1 million to $2 million over the course of 10 years, right, your earnings have gone from a $200,000 investment to a $2 million minus how much you borrowed, a $1.2 million investment. Instead of doubling your money, you've multiplied your money by six times. And so it's those two ethoses of maximizing time with the market and leveraging safe or risk-adjusted borrowings that have kind of guided my family, my wife's family's investing and what we've tried to do at this stage.
Well, that is such good sound advice. Thank you, John. So not time in the market.
Not time in the market. I mean, think of just the last 3 years alone.
Mm. How can you pick it?
How would you would have thought COVID would be the worst thing ever and we've had the most amazing 18 months afterward.
Yeah.
And you would have thought that high interest rates were the worst things ever. But now prices have almost recovered to full-time highs.
Yeah.
In Perth and Adelaide they have. In Sydney they almost have. Melbourne's on the way. You can't pick this market.
Yeah.
All you can do is maximize your time in the market. If you can hold a property for 10 years and you buy a good property, that part is really important. I can almost guarantee you're going to make much more money than when you started.
Yeah, that's amazing. So, John, at the moment, we've got a few things that are affecting the market.
Yeah.
We've got, with investors, we've got interest rates that are going up.
Yeah.
We've also got, here in Victoria in particular, we've got new taxes that are coming in and thresholds that have changed.
Yes.
So for land tax, as of the 1st of all, the 31st of December, the threshold now is at 50,000.
Yeah.
We've got thresholds changing on apartments on land tax. So it's going to be an interesting time. One thing that hasn't changed is that the sales numbers, even this week, are at 5,600 sales for the week. So the sales numbers aren't actually being affected. And that's probably because of the lack of stock in the market. And so prices aren't really being affected as much. We're still getting a lot of bidders and a lot of buyers at every one of our auctions.
Oh, great.
With these changes coming in, where do you see the market going? Should people wait?
Having just said it's impossible to pick the market.
It is. Because I get a lot of buyers at the moment saying to me, Jane, we're going to wait to see what the market's going to do.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I give the exact advice that John's just given right now. It's your situation that determines when you should buy and when you shouldn't buy.
That's right.
Not the time of the market.
That's right.
If you need to buy now, whether it's one of the 11 reasons, as Josh Fegan tells us, one of the 11 reasons of why transactions happen, whether it's births, deaths, marriages, divorces, aspirational buyers, tree change, sea change.
Empty nesters.
A whole heap of them. And mortgage stress is probably going to be one of the biggest ones coming through.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're hearing at the moment there's going to be a lot, 150,000 households are going to fall off the cliff in the next month where they're going from fixed rates to variable rates. And this is why I'm asking this question.
Yeah.
If there's going to be a lot more stock on the market, will it change the pricing? Because we're not seeing it at the moment.
So let me make a general comment and then I'll answer your question specific about, you know, kind of the crystal ball of forecasting, price forecasting. You know, property is such an emotional and important decision. You might only buy three or four houses in your life, right? And that's why I think, you know, and I think Stavros is right up there, like it's so important to find an agent who you trust to hold your hand and to feel is got your back in the process. And to me, that's why my first answer to the question is the right answer for you in terms of do I buy now or do I wait is very much around for you as a couple, you as a family, you as an individual buyer. How are you going to have no regrets? How you make the decision is probably more important than the decision itself. Because in the end, you'll probably be fine. You live in the greatest country in the world, right? We've got a great safety net. If you listen to this podcast, I understand your listeners are pretty kick-ass, right? And you'll be fine. Whether you make the best or worst investments of your life, the most important thing is how do you make it as a family? Does it bring you as a couple close together? Do you feel like you've done your research and made the best decision you have with the information you have at the time? That's all you can do. So in the spirit of that, let me give you some information, right? In thinking about pricing, I always like to, you know, I'm an economics major. I think at the intersection of supply and demand, right? So price is determined when supply goes up, prices go down. When supply goes down, prices go up, all things being equal, same with demand. So what we're seeing now is the following. There are a lot of factors that lead people to be hesitant about supply. That is, supply is when someone says, oh, I am going to sell my house. As Stav talked about, there are these top 11 reasons why people sell, and most of those reasons are not discretionary. You have a birth, you have a death, or something like that. And that's why in Australia, what you find is probably 75% of the 500,000 sales that happen every year, they will come to market whether that seller likes it or not. Because they just have to. They need the money. There's another kid coming and they can't fit the apartment, whatever it is, right? But it's that 30% of discretionary sales, that investor who could sell now or sell later. You know, that person who could buy a big house now, or maybe they wait for a month or for 12 months. That determination, that supply is discretionary. And that all comes down to what I'll call seller confidence. And seller confidence to me is the intersection of three different things. Number one, that you'll get the price that you want. Number two, that your situation, the stability of your situation, means that it makes sense for you to sell. And number three, that you know what you're going to do after you sell. And right now, the buyers are back. They've been back since February or March, as Stav talked about. A lot of people are going to open homes. International, particularly from Asia, has come back. New Zealand is now really coming back. People are ready to buy. That was not the case a year ago. That's been the case the last 6 months. Number two, seller supply. Most people have a job. Unemployment is low, right? Most people know if they lost their job, they get another job. There's still a lot of jobs out there, but inflation is coming down. So this is pretty new now that if you're a seller, you're not going, oh, I'm not sure what's going to happen in the market. Will there be a recession? Will I still have my job? You're going, okay, it's probably going to be fine. It's getting there. The big issue number three, which is holding back supply, is where do I go? If I sell this house,
where's my next house coming from?
Can I rent? No, you probably can't. There's not many rentals out there.
Yeah.
And to me, we need all those three things to be right for supply to be unlocked. This is kind of like domains business. The reality is we've got two out of three things. That's better than zero out of three. But until we get that third one, I don't think we'll see a lot of supply come back in the market. And so if you go back to how is price determined, supply will probably stay not 0%, but 70% of average, 80% of average. And so what that means is, all things being equal, you'll probably see prices stay the same or slightly rise. And indeed, Domain are forecasting, we forecast a few months ago, it will probably go about 6-9%, you know, throughout the course of FY24.
Yeah. I reckon you're spot on.
Yeah. John, housing crisis is a headline we're seeing. It's become a clickbait thing for, you know, Australia's housing crisis. Can I just firstly get your opinion? Do we have a housing crisis in Australia? And I'm talking here, like you said, can you get a rental even if it's for a couple of years between selling and then buying another property? Do you believe there is a real housing crisis? And I've got more questions. Just answer that one first.
Yeah, I'll answer that one quickly. And I do think that we do. And I wouldn't call it a housing crisis so much as a supply crisis, right? Going back to people's point, we don't have enough houses and apartments for people to buy and rent in order that people can achieve their life goals. Because to me, why is there a crisis? There's a crisis because things aren't working out, that the market is not at equilibrium. And to me, we live in the greatest country in the world. We've got all these people who want to come here for short term to work and study. We've got all these people, record migration, 400,000 people come here last year. And because of that, which is a wonderful thing, other countries don't have that challenge, we need to have a supply that is matching that. And what's happening right now is we don't. And to me, I don't know if maybe crisis is too strong a word, but we certainly have a supply problem where people can't meet their needs and therefore people are having to move, live where they don't necessarily want to live or live in suboptimal conditions. That's not the country we want to be in.
So my question sort of relates to the fact that we have an ageing population in Australia, and thank goodness for our migration because, you know, we're not going to solve the issues that an ageing population brings. But what I am hearing anecdotally is that there is a lot of places in Australia where there used to be a 5-person family living in a 4-bedroom, 2-bathroom house, there is now perhaps one person or two people. That the way that we very quickly could solve this housing crisis is if we became more open to the idea of multi-generational living, if councils made it possible for someone to put a granny flat in their backyard, or if people became more open to the idea that, okay, I might be a 65-year-old retired woman. Unfortunately, I've lost my husband. Kids have all moved out. But I could share the extra 3 bedrooms in my home with someone, even a family, who needs a home. And that sort of makes me think about connection and things like Uber. It's connecting someone with a service.
Yeah.
And that's how these tech companies have become so successful, because they have short-circuited that mechanism of connection. So can I sort of draw a little sort of line there and say that perhaps even a company like Domain, it's about connecting people with what they need, which for someone might be a home and for someone else it might be, I just need someone to actually support me, to clean the gutters, to mow the lawns, to share my home with me. Can we work out how to connect Australians who perhaps are living in these big empty houses, don't want to sell, don't want to leave their family home, but connect them with people who need a home?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a great point. And if we have time, I can definitely talk about how we thought out supply at Uber, because that was the number one thing for them. Like, how do we get more cars on the road? Because people want to ride.
Yeah.
And there just weren't enough cars and drivers. I think about property in the same way. A statistic that may be of interest, you know, back 30 years ago, we had on average 2.87 people living in a house, in a dwelling. Now that's down to under 2.5.
Right? So the stats back up what I'm
the stats
sort of
back
hearing.
Up what you're saying. Yeah. And you know, what that means is actually we can get less and less people to fit in the same amount of houses, right? And like, that's a problem. It's a problem in a few ways, right? There's actually a problem around, is that a good thing from a social isolation point of view? It also exacerbates the supply problem, because you now need 10% more houses just to house the same number of people. If you have more people coming in, you have a bigger, you know, supply crisis. So I think in commensurate with that, anything that could be done to increase the supply is a good thing, right? If you can start a program where people are willing to house share, and I see it happening actually more on the East Coast, right? Actually, there's real positive social benefits and it helps, you know, solve that supply crisis. If you can, and I think this is something that the real estate industry has spoken a lot of, if you can encourage people where, you know, why is that, you know, older person living in a 5-bedroom house, right? Some of that is because actually they don't have a place to go. There haven't been enough purpose-built apartments where they feel they could move into. Some has been the cost of a transaction is pretty high, particularly around stamp duty or taxation or things like that. So they'd rather not sell. They'd rather not transact. They have to. So that's why at Domain, and it obviously encourages our business as well, we are trying to influence so that the barriers to people moving, selling and buying, you know, are coming down. So anything you can do, social, financial, taxation, otherwise, we think is a good thing when you have a supply crisis.
And we're seeing that on the ground. When we go and inspect properties, there's a lot of homes out there where people probably need to downsize, but they're so emotionally connected in the home. It's been in their household for many years. Maybe a partner's passed away and the elderly person stays on. But there is definitely a housing crisis at the moment, especially now with land sales at the lowest they've ever been. And that's come straight from Victorian Statewide Conveyancing today. They're one of the top five conveyances in the state. And they were saying land sales are the lowest they've ever been. Ugh. So builders aren't building anymore. People aren't going. So those buyers are now coming back into the established market. So we're not getting that new supply coming in. And then going in and just looking at my own household,
yeah.
You know, Xenia, we had to, you know, say goodbye to our furry friend recently, and the house is really now empty without our dog there, and Xen's gone overseas. The kids have moved out, and I sat there and I looked at her the other morning before she went overseas and said, "I think we need to downsize. We've got 4 bedrooms, 3 bathrooms," and I said, "Well, what are we doing here? A whole family could move back in here, and we could just move into an apartment." But what the Victorian government has actually done also is they've got this absentee owner tax that they're bringing in. So there's a lot of absentee homes, especially in Docklands, where they're owned by overseas investors.
Yeah.
And they're sitting there empty, just locked up, cocooned. And we could be using these homes now for the rental crisis that's out there. John and I met the CEO of Airbnb one of our conferences. So John and I went away to a conference. And good friend of John's, actually, and John brought her into the conference. And we were having a chat that areas like the Mornington Peninsula, last year were 2,000 homes on the whole Mornington Peninsula on Airbnb. This year, there's 5,000. It's huge.
Yeah.
Where did those 3,000 homes come from? Now, they didn't all come from the rental market, but they did come, a lot of them did. And it's affected. So there's so many things we can actually tick off, and we could talk all day on this subject on what we could do to start and creating more homes. But that is a really good idea you come up with there, Jane. If Domain could do something there and do some sort of sharing.
Well, it's certainly not my idea. It's just, you know, I live in a regional community and there are stats that are just saying there is such a huge proportion of some council districts where, like you said, there is less people living in houses just. And it just does. It gets beyond you. I'm in a house that's probably too big for me on a bigger property. I would love it if perhaps someone could come and help with a little bit of the work around the property.
Yeah.
You just got to, I think, open your mind. And it's funny you mentioned Airbnb because I do believe they're getting a little bit demonized, possibly rightfully so in some sectors. But 20 years ago, you would never have thought that you would put your home on an internet site and say, "Hey, come and stay with me. I'll host you." Or don't you think, John, that with technology and these technological changes, we are more comfortable now with perhaps opening up our world to people that we would not have done?
I think the responsibility of technology is to make life better, you know, for people. And I think, you know, whether it's companies like Airbnb or Uber, just creating safe ways for people to connect and derive value, whether you're a driver trying to earn an income, you know, or whether you're someone trying to get a cheaper ride or a place to stay that wouldn't have been available or have a holiday for your family. Like, these are wonderful services, you know, that are provided. It actually reminds me of when I lived in Ireland for about 6.5 years, and there was a really big issue with drink driving in Ireland. And what happened was, you know, people were driving back for the pub. And so they cracked down a lot of drink driving, which makes sense. But it actually created a lot of social isolationism because a lot of these particularly, you know, older men, that was their community. And so society is very complex. Technology has brought new challenges and new opportunities. I think for all of us who have a role to play, whether it's in real estate or technology, we've got to think through those issues. And I think social isolationism, it's the irony of technology where we've never been more connected and maybe never as lonely. It's a big responsibility for us.
Yeah, definitely. I've got a couple of questions. You've lived in so many different countries. Mm. Where did you meet your wife?
I met my wife in Silicon Valley in San Francisco. Yeah, I'd just moved there from Ireland and she'd moved back from being at the East Coast.
Okay. So American, Australian?
Oh, she's American. American. She was born and bred in California and basically just lived in California and Massachusetts her whole life.
Fantastic. And her family's still there?
Her family's still there, yeah. They live in San Jose, California.
Oh, so beautiful spot.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. That's near where we used to live as well. So
you get the opportunity to go back, introduce the grandkids.
We have not braved the long flight back yet with the kids. We're kind of stalling on that. What we've done is, we have a lovely home in Sydney and, and we have a floor just for them.
Great.
They're always welcome. No, we love them very much and we're very grateful, and we want to see them as much as possible.
Well, my question then is, because I'm married to a lady from overseas as well, and we've been married 28 years and it was difficult the first 10 years. How does she find it, immigrating to another country away from her family?
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. There are so many things about where you live, your home, that makes it feel like home. It's not just the quality of the house or the amenities, and those are important too. It's the people around you, it's the friend circles you have, it's the look and feel, it's the familiarity. And even though I think Sydney's and Melbourne, I think Australia's the greatest place to live in the world, and there's so many great things here, from weather to technology to sports and safety. There's no place like the home that you grew up in. And for her, that's very much California.
Yeah, well.
And so, I think we're all adjusting, particularly when you overlay that with a new stage of life of, no kids to two kids to three kids and, making new friends and, settling into new churches and things like that. There's a lot there.
Yeah.
Have you picked an AFL team? You're obviously big on the sport. So, or is it NRL where you're based in Sydney?
At this stage of my life, it's the least amount of sports watching I've ever done in my whole life.
Really?
Least of once. I'm still a Sydney Swans fan, having a tragic run up in the 80s. And for a variety of reasons, I'm actually a Brisbane Broncos fan for the NRL. Oh. It's a different story.
Oh, no. How does that go at Domain in Sydney?
Not so well. Particularly during State of Origin.
But, yes.
Yeah.
John, we're almost out of time, but before you go, Domain, a big partner of The Block on Channel 9,
that's right,
which has just kicked off. I'm going to cross-promote my other podcast that I do with Shayna Blaze. It's called Homestyle. I'll put a link in the show notes. But it is exciting, isn't it, just to see the obsession with real estate and renovating. That the numbers on The Block, people just tune in, watch it, and have done for decades.
For decades,
so
literally
decades. Are you going to be watching this season?
I am watching the highlights of the season. We actually had Shelley Craft come to our company All Hands, the All Hands I was talking about last week, and take some Q&A, and we were like on a chat channel together with her. So it's a huge thing for our company. We're very enthusiastic about it. There's over 10 million Australians that watch it, and it's such a big part of the Australian ethos. So I'll be watching the highlights, I'll be cheering, and it's great to see, particularly that part of Melbourne get such publicity as well. That's a big thing for us.
Look, over the years, Thursday nights, growing up as a kid, it was WWF wrestling. It was as we got older, it was Seinfeld, tuning into Seinfeld, All Friends. But I'll tell you what, for me, it's 17 years, 17 seasons. And because I've been a real estate agent right through that whole period, for me, last Sunday is one of my favourite nights of the year, where we launch The Block and we get to see everyone slightly older. I'll tell you what, Scotty's looking a little bit older now, but we see the same enthusiasm and different. It's changed over the years, the demographics of, contestants that come into it.
Yeah.
In just their style, flair. But I loved the other night, and the controversy was there. You and I discussed it before, where someone didn't read the brief or they thought they were above the brief. And, that actually reflects back into real estate. Listen to what people say, not what you think they want to do. Mm. And that's where I think it was Steph and Gian made a mistake the other day. But I reckon it's going to be a really good season. It's in Hampton. It's in Bayside, Melbourne. I think last year going into Gisborne was a little bit of a experiment. But coming back into Hampton, that's true Melbourne. And I remember my dad had a fish and chip shop in and a chicken shop in Hampton.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I would have been about five or six. It was called Nick's Chicks there in Hampton. He sold the building for $100,000.
Oh, my goodness.
And 3 years ago, the same building, commercial building, sold for $5
million. Well, and my hot tip is that if you own a mid-century property that looks like the before shots on the block, within the next couple of months, I'd say there is going to be a huge demand when people see what you can actually do to some of these properties that fill Australian suburbs that you think, really, would I move into that? Ooh, you might once you see the treatment from the block. John, thank you so much. It's been really insightful to hear about your time at Uber and Google and what you're doing with Domain now. Thank you so much for being on Your Home Podcast.
It's a pleasure. Thanks so much, Stav, and thanks, John. Pleasure to see you guys.
That's John Fung, the Chief Revenue Officer at Domain. Thank you, Stav, for once again bringing in such incredible people. Go back into the feed of this podcast if you want to hear Alice Stoltz from Domain. It was an incredible episode. Yes. You mentioned some of our other guests. We've had George Colin Barris on, Andrew Bogart. Like, go back in
Fred
the feed.
Fred Harrison.
Fred from, he was amazing, from Richie's.
CEO from Richie's and IGA, so it was good.
Share this episode with a friend if you think that they would get something out of it. Tell your friends about it. And of course, join us next time on the Your Home Podcast. Thanks to O'Brien Real Estate, where property advice is on the house.
Thanks for listening to the Your Home Podcast, brought to you by O'Brien Real Estate, where property advice is on the house.